You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
So excited to see you all here, the ladies who lunch. I mean, as Stephen Sondheim said, we are probably not the kind of women he thought of when he wrote this song, because who has time? But I'm a big fan, and I can't believe that we haven't worked together, Pamela Hunt.
Yes.
You have, you're a fantastic director.
Thank you.
I Googled you.
Yes.
I did too.
Oh my God. Well, the theaters you've directed at, I mean, also the York Theater in New York, many great shows, and congratulations on your, you were nominated for a Drama Desk for, what is that
the
musical?
The musical of musicals, the musical. And we had a great success with it there. It played, it came back, and then it went off Broadway for a year at New World Stages. And then it's played all over the country, and I'm still getting residual checks.
Fantastic.
Love that.
Yeah, so it was a lovely thing.
That's great. And Anne, you and I all worked together one night. Remember the Bombshell?
Yes, of course. How could I forget?
remember that show?
We did the Bombshell concert from Smash for the Actors.
Yes, that's how we crossed paths for a moment. But
Yes, and we shared a dressing room. And she played, of course, Ivy's mother.
That's right. But also, I'm a big fan, and I could kick myself, because as I'm going over your all of the great shows you've done, Avenue Q, that's when you were just, when the New York Times, you know, this a star-making review. I mean, that was so, was that the first really?
It was certainly the first time anybody noticed me,
big time, and because I just saw the show just recently when they redid it, and what a great, that must have been a fantastic.
Oh, it was the greatest experience.
And then you did it in London?
I did.
Oh, great.
Which doesn't always happen when you originate a role.
No, that was just sheer luck. The actress they had hired got a TV show at the last minute and backed out, and they were absolutely desperate. So Cameron McIntosh, who produced it in London, called and said, are you available to come over? And I had just left the Broadway company.
Wow.
Because I just had my son, and I wanted to spend some time at home with the baby. And then he was like, do you want to come to London? I was like, yes, I do.
Did you pack up the baby and
I
go?
Did.
Of course.
I said, look, I sort of have a weird situation, Mr. McIntosh. I have a husband and a baby, and my parents live with me. And he was like, we'll bring them all over. I was like, okay.
That's why he's a good producer. Yes.
If he needs something, he has the means to get
That's
it.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And Angie Schwar.
Yes.
Okay. Can I say again how great you were in the show, The Prom?
Thank you.
I love
so
the show.
Much.
I loved everything
so
about it.
Thank
but
you.
But you were a standout. And you were like really, do you know each other? Have you just met?
We're just kind of meeting, yeah.
So
yeah,
you were like famous before you came famous in that show, right? You were not, everybody.
No, I've never been famous.
Well, you
not.
Were, we all knew about you.
Well, maybe, just because I've been around.
Yeah.
You know.
That counts.
But we did get to do, I did a moment of Bombshell with you.
Oh,
if you remember in the room, I mean, you were just so lovely and so fantastic in that. But we did one little moment in the studio where Scott and Mark had asked me to come and just read the Deborah Messing stuff.
Okay, great.
In the studio. So I wasn't in the show, but that was like, that's the one time I got to be in the room with you. I'm so excited.
But you know,
to get to watch.
Thanks. I was probably so traumatized by stepping in and doing something
no.
I never did before.
I watched you doing that, and it was amazing because I was like, it's just what we do. You're honed in. You know, I'm not social, but I don't socialize when I'm in rehearsal. I'm very like honed in on what I'm doing, and so I kind of watched you do that in that rehearsal, and it was quite quite amazing.
Well, thanks.
And I was like,
thank
that's
you.
Why we, she we, is who she
that
is.
That was a great after party, too. Is that
yes, it was.
Yeah, it's great.
But I love your story, Angie.
Thank you.
I love the way you, starting as a dancer, right? Kentucky.
Always, always,
growing
always.
Up, did you have the dream as a young girl?
You know, it's so funny. People ask me this in master classes, and I wanted to ask you guys because I didn't always know.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, this is where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I'm going to be on Broadway. I just...
Or your fantasy of seeing yourself perform or...
I think I just always wanted to perform. Yeah. I don't know what that was and how to have gotten to where I grew up in a small town in Kentucky. Leroy Reams, your
right?
bestie.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Was from the same dance studio. He was a little older than me.
Yes.
But I knew of him on Broadway.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite know how to get there. And I didn't really know
so
the
you had an
the
idea.
Avenues.
You had an idea that there that people had come before you
yes.
to
but I
do
never
something.
Thought I could just do it. So I just took the little shows that came to me and it sort of got me here. I mean, it was theme parks, Showgirl in Atlantic City, Showgirl in Japan, MGM
okay.
Studios,
yeah. traveling.
You know? Yeah, just saying yes to whatever came my way and it ended up being here. But I wondered, did you always know when you were
yeah.
little that this is what
I
was?
I always knew that. I always fantasized. The story is in a chorus line, my childhood
of course.
Story, but it's through another character. But I heard music and I would just jump up and start dancing and always fantasized seeing myself on a stage dancing. Nothing else. I just, you know, so that, I didn't know then, but I thought, thinking back as an adult, I would go, that I always had that mm-hmm. that idea. Now, you growing up in Honolulu?
Yes, well, outside of Honolulu.
Oh, okay.
Not even as glamorous as Honolulu.
I know, that sounds so glamorous.
But
you know,
Hawaii.
Yeah. In Hawaii,
was,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
So, was it the dance? What was it, singing?
It was just...
Performing?
It wasn't even that.
School?
I saw school plays. You know, I went to this great school, Punahou. Barack Obama was 2 years ahead of me in school.
Wow.
And when I was, you know, I always tell this story. Like, I was in sixth grade, and the high schoolers were doing Godspell. And so I watched it, and I was like, how can these high schoolers be so good? You know, and in that group of people in Godspell were two Tony nominees, Willie Falk and Angie Jones.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
And
oh
and but like, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know that. I didn't know. But anyway, this they were wonderful.
And so I they guess, inspired you
yeah,
to
Yeah, they inspired
think
me to go
about?
Like, oh, people can do that? You know, like, it just seemed like so far away from, like, my... consciousness. And I started going to see plays and, you know, going to community theater plays. And I just loved it. But I never thought that I was going to be a professional performer.
Did you start in production? Did I read that?
Yes, somewhere? I started as a production assistant.
You did? Oh,
yeah,
wow.
On Broadway. Yeah.
I, so you had your, on Broadway.
Well, this is what happened. I went to Brown University. There was a producer who had also gone to Brown and she was looking for an intern. So she contacted the theater department. They basically went, does anybody want to be an intern for this producer? And I was like, I do. And I interviewed with her, and she said, okay. And I moved to New York, and I lived in a converted garage, somebody's garage in Brooklyn. They had turned into an apartment, and I rented it for $600 a month.
Wow.
And I, you know, wow. lived out of this garage, and I took the F train to work. You know, like...
And what
I didn't
year
know
was this?
Anything. 1985?
So was that a... treacherous train ride?
No.
It would have been in the 70s, yeah. It would have been.
No, yeah. It wasn't particularly scary, but I didn't know anything.
I just learned where the F train was. Like,
you know, yeah, like
ago.
I literally
York,
carried my map yeah. like this in front of me yeah. everywhere
well,
I went.
When you first come to New York, you're a young person. It's yeah. all fantastic. You're
yeah.
kind of omnipotent, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, I'm in yeah. the city, you know? I'm a city girl like Rhoda.
Yeah, it's funny.
What do I know? You know, like everything I knew was from TV shows.
Yeah.
Right.
I had no... actual knowledge of yeah. New York City.
So when did the transition happen? Or so how did that happen?
How did that happen? Well, kind of because I was working as production assistant on this Broadway show called Sleight of Hand by John Pielmeyer, who wrote Agnes of God.
Yeah.
And this was a thriller. And we opened at the Court Theater and we closed in a week. But I had been there for the entire process of raising the money, doing the backers auditions, you know, meeting all the people involved with putting on a Broadway show.
Like a
wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
it was a huge education
in a very short amount of time. And I had met, you know, the actors and their agents. You know, I was always at their offices because this was a long time ago, and we didn't have email, and I had to drop stuff off.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. I would type the revisions. I would Xerox them. I would go to people's houses and either, like, put them under the door.
No.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
It was that's how it was then.
Yeah.
We just didn't have the technology.
Yeah.
You know, and I was the intern. That was my job.
You did.
So you could recommend this to some young person.
Well, it would never be the same now.
It'd be so much different because you could just do all the changes.
Yeah, you can tell them like this, and then you email it to everybody.
But you're still getting the idea of all the things that are going on.
Right, of course. Like, just to be in the room when the auditions were happening was so instructive.
Wow.
Because then you get to see. And, you know, I had come out of Brown, and I was a theater major, but I wasn't, like, a great acting star by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, when I was at Brown, Laura Linney was at Brown. Tim Blake Nelson was at Brown. These were people who, you know, had huge amounts of talent. It was quite obvious.
And Harada was at Brown.
I wasn't a thing. You know, I wasn't great like they were. Like, if you saw them.
But they were prominent.
That's what I'm saying, if you would see them, if you'd watch them act and do scene work and stuff, you'd be like, oh, they're very
I get it, yeah.
And like, I'm not that good. I'm not going to make it. You know, because you think, if I'm not even that great in my school, how could I possibly make it in the real world? But I didn't realize then that sometimes it's your uniqueness that helps you get work.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I was, you know, I was meeting all these people, being the production assistant, and I met everybody's agents, and one of them was a manager who, I don't know, we kind of clicked, and she came to see me, you know, do my club act.
Where was that? I want to see that.
I did a cabaret at the Duplex, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The way back in the day, and they were like, well, we'll send you out. I was like, really? And that's sort of what happened.
Did you write that show yourself, or
did someone help you? I wrote it with my director.
Okay.
You know.
You had an idea, though.
Yeah, I had an idea, you know.
See, everybody knows you have to
and
have
you knew
a
you were funny, right?
I worked in this office, right? I worked in this producer's office, and this guy, who was an aspiring director, also worked in the producer's office. And so we would talk during the day and come up with ideas around typing letters and making phone calls, you know.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic.
No, it was really fantastic. That was, you know, it was a great time to be young. Yeah.
What was the first show?
I guess it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Manhattan Theater Club.
Right.
I auditioned for that, I think, because a girl from Brown was working as an intern in the casting office there. And they were like, do you know somebody? It's always who you know.
Yeah,
that's right. And they brought me in, and I got it. And I was like, okay.
So that changed your whole...
Well, I got my equity card.
Yeah, that's it.
Was that your exact first audition? Sorry, Anne, was that...
I don't know if it was my exact first audition, but it was...
Professional.
In New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably professional audition.
And you booked it.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if it was my first one, honestly. Yeah. You know, it's all a blur. It was a really long
time ago. But it's life-changing to start seeing yourself, to perception, seeing yourself.
Like you are good enough to be a professional, I thought was such a big statement to make, because I was not a trained person. You know, I mean, I went to school and I took acting class, but I was, you know, a liberal arts major.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't, you know, a fantastic
anything. You know, you said something that I read once that was very moving, and I think we can all agree. It's you said something about being a journeyman.
Yeah, I am.
And I relate to that, too, because being, you know, doing a chorus line, and I love the character Cassie when she said, I want to do what I love as much as I can for as long as I can. And I went, gee, I always felt good saying that. You know, it was kind of a... you know, affirmation of something I really believed in, because, you know, we're still here.
I still say
that. Well, that's it. I still say that, too.
Yeah.
Pamela, when you you're from?
I'm from Indiana.
Indiana.
I'm nearby state,
okay.
In a farm community,
right?
And
I know that area.
Nobody
very
was
well.
In the theater.
What city? Carthage.
The name of it. 1,060, or I like to say 1,059 people know.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bitty town. And my mother was good enough to drive me to tap lessons. There was someone came from Indianapolis. I even then thought, they're not very good. You know, as you know, there's good tap technique, yeah, and bad.
Tap so she, was big.
Yeah, yeah, so she drove me to a guy that was danced with Eleanor Powell. And it was a little town named Connersville, and I went there for years. And then I actually got in, studied some ballet, got in to Butler University, and went there and got my BA there. Wanted to be a performer, went to Chicago first, which was a very good move for me.
So when you were wanted to be a performer, where did you get
dancing,
that spark?
I think, first.
Yeah.
I don't
TV
know. My parents,
movies?
I think TV movies. Yeah. My parents did take me to Indianapolis to see a lot of road companies early on. And then they took me to New York, and I was like, never. I remember, I forget what we saw, but I'm like, oh, I'm coming out of the theater. They said it was very good. I was like, I'll never be the same.
Oh.
I want to do this.
That.
Yeah, and I so I did, and then I went to Butler, and then I came to New York, and I started performing. I was in something with, actually, God rest her soul, the late Georgia Engel. We did Lindeneer.
Oh, yeah.
That was at ELT. That was, I got a nice, did some really specialty things. Then I did that, and what happened to me was I was at a callback, I might as well date myself, for the magic show,
sure,
for the Anita Morris part.
Right.
And I did a funny thing, and I said, you know, I don't sing well enough. It's interesting. I just don't. I heard this. I said, I'm not going to get the things I'd like to get. And so all at once, I was offered a choreography job. From that led to a directing job. And once I got that, I never looked back. And it was hard when I started because there were not a lot of women. Still,
yeah,
not a lot of women,
yes,
directing, but
right,
really there weren't. I remember somebody sat with me and said, I want to tell, I'll go through this list of the regions or whatever of the places that like women. I went, okay.
Nice.
So I really didn't realize how difficult it was going to be, you know, but I just kept doing it and I did well. I just,
there was,
know,
not a lot of women choreographing
or directing.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Just no. And
so you negotiate your, by just maintaining, just doing job after job and making, like you say, networking is such,
yes,
an important.
Yes, and sort of my story too, that I was married and then my husband passed away. So I had to keep, I said, well, I'm not going to go, I'm going to work at something I love, you know, and I'd started directing. So I just kept at it. I had a good agent, and that's just the thing. I just kept, you know, and met good people along the line who helped me, and that's just kind of it, just
and
keeping at it.
And you worked with, you know, it's like, we have so many friends in common.
I work with sort of the end of the, I don't want to say the end of, but, you know, like Kay Ballard.
Yeah.
I mean, all of those wonderful people, Jane Cannell.
What was that like? I mean, I loved her like
Well, we did, well, a little short story. We did a show. I was asked to do a new show at Paper Mill. And we were workshopping it first. And they said, well, we're going to do it, Pam. You're going to direct it. But this was, I think, the late 80s, early 90s. And she said, and you're going to have a star. It's going to be Kay Ballard. And I said, oh, you want me to work on something new? Because I knew that we won't get into it, but it was a little rocky, you know, the script. And I said, okay, it's a star, but let me do it. Well, of course, what ended up happening is she and I hit it off.
Yeah.
And she said, would you come and revamp my club act?
Wow.
Which is what I did,
is
you
what
know.
You took it to
Cleveland?
Yes, yes, mm-hmm, yes. And so it was from then on, and she was
and
also.
All of her Henny Youngman jokes?
Yeah, oh, God. She was so funny. Just, and we did other things, and I got her some gigs too, which was great.
Fantastic.
You know, I did a thing for the Indianapolis Symphony. So it was just interesting how it all worked. And I always tell young people, take the job. You do not know who you're going to meet.
Yeah.
When people get
exactly,
like, oh, I don't know. You just do not know what the connection is going to be.
Yeah.
And I've found that all along.
And you never miss performing after
not
that.
Not a minute.
You never missed it. You
I do
just
a lot of comedy.
Right,
and I sort of decided to, as a woman, to kind of focus on that. I do a lot of plays. I do as many plays as I do musicals.
You have such a variety in your work.
Well, I mean, made it my business at one point to say, I've got to do the play, because it's hard to do if you start with one thing. And to do comedy, because strangely enough, I think not as many women, or at least when I did comedy, or maybe even do comedy.
Yeah.
And so I kind of focused, honed in on that, and it's worked well for me, you know, just to kind of, it just sort of happened, and I just sort of, you know,
that takes a special talent, though. Right?
Yeah, it's just,
and
as I said,
Kay
was great.
The timing, and the sense of,
yeah.
you know, presenting.
And we had a lot of laughs, and you know, she had such great material, and I would encourage her, because she said, oh, a little late again, I'm tired of that material. I said, put this back in. She had some of the best special material I've ever heard anyone
Arthur
have.
Arthur Siegel's
Yes, and she just had this great song called Teeny Tiny. Have you ever heard that?
Yes.
The little teeny tiny man that walked, she told this little story, and she also played the flute. She was very, there's something about her that I don't think people understand. They think, oh, she's kind of broad and was broad. But she's also very delicate had an unbelievable
voice. And a great singer.
Great singing voice. I mean, just amazing. So that
and
was,
And she did this fantastic, there's a documentary. Have you seen
her
documentary?
I have not seen it yet.
And it's fantastic. And she's on a TV show. She did a lot of television.
Can I tell you something funny about that? She said, well, Pammy, I've got the documentary is coming out. She said, I think it's at least as good as Rosemary's. So you never lose your competitive edge. I said, well, good.
No matter what level, right?
No.
So this is something I was thinking about, because I always like to know why we do the things we do and how we're talking about the work and how we sustain ourselves, you know? There are two little instances I want to relate that happened to me and that started me thinking about this, then I'll throw the question out to the table. The first situation was Saida Thompson. Do you remember
Saida
Thompson? Fantastic actress. She starred in Twigs, George Firth's play. And I was really just kind of starting out, and I went to the Tony Awards. They had a big celebration. She won the Tony, Best Actress in a Play. And I was shy because I just adored her, so I'm a big fan, and I get really shy. And I go, I have to go up and congratulate her. And I got the nerve up, went to congratulate her, and I said, congratulations on your Tony. You were so wonderful. She goes, yeah, but I don't know if I'll ever work again. And she just said it like that, and I went, she didn't say, I don't know when my next job is, really. She said, I don't know if I'm ever going to work again. And I just was stunning. Okay, the second one is I shared a voice teacher, I don't think I'm speaking out of school, a Marge Rivingston with Bette Midler, who I adore. She's, you know, passionate, she cares. She's so good. She sold out Madison Square Garden. And Marge would go to her dressing room after and warm her down, you know, vocalize her before the show and then warm her down. And she told me she came into the dressing room and Bette had her head in her hands and she was going, repeating over and over, it's over, it's over, it's over. And it made me laugh because I thought, well, it's either like a joke, affect, you know, like, huh, it's or she was feeling it that it didn't work, the show or something. And it was so stunning, again, that it made me laugh. But I thought that it's over feeling, you know, and I thought reflected on the times that my sister had to remind me that in my lowest ebb, there's always something that comes up when we talk about it later. But I get really into a place where I go, I don't know, I is it over? So I'm putting the question out there. Is it over feeling? When does that, have you ever had that? And how do you...
I'm having it right now.
How do you bring yourself off the ledge? How do you talk yourself off of
I don't know.
Are you really?
Angie, that was Angie who said, no, yes, I always feel that, but how do you talk yourself off the ledge?
I don't, because I don't think it's over.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I know. I feel like I've had so many, like, long stretches of nothingness that I always just go like, this is this, and something will come along, and something does.
That's very healthy.
I don't, at this point now, I'm like, I don't worry about it.
That's good.
I don't know that I need to say, like, I don't care. I do care. I want to work. I love to work.
But you also have your son.
Yeah, but I don't fear, you know, like a break in the action. And I kind of enjoy it, actually.
You can have a life sometimes.
Yeah, that's
but Angie, now that the show is so everybody loved that show, and they loved you in it. It was fantastic. So
thank you.
And it's a family, you know, kind of a show is an intimate, wonderful experience. And I got a feeling from watching it that everybody, it was a lot of love backstage.
Yeah, we've been together for a long time. Brooks, right. Ashmanskas, Beth Level, Christopher Siever, and I have been doing it for 7 years. Wow. So the four of us from the first table read. In fact, I'm seeing them later tonight.
Oh,
we miss each other so much.
Oh, that's great.
So how do you separate from that? How do you?
Well,
you're gonna
I do have
to
have
crash a little.
Yeah,
right?
I am. I think I finally have the 3 weeks after. I literally had something planned every second of every day. As you well know, I may or may not have seen you at Steps there.
Yes,
you know? I have something planned, and I think I wasn't allowing myself to crash. You know, you just mm-hmm. keep going. I do. Every time I close a show, I always, and it's sort of a joke to friends that know me, I always go, bye, Broadway, like when I leave the stage. Because I always, in my head, I always go, it's the last thing I'm going to do. But I think in my heart,
yeah.
I do know that I do have a network of people.
Yes,
and if
yeah.
there is something right, I'm very specific, so if there is something right that I'm right for, it will come along, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Yeah.
And
because you have done so many different things,
I have.
I mean, your musical background.
I have, but mainly chorus.
Yeah.
Right. Ula and the producers, and then Angie. Angie was the only thing I've ever really created.
Yeah. But also, this is history making because. I had a Donna McKechnie type audition once, but I didn't get it.
Oh.
That's really hard, you know. But you had a character named after you, right?
Right. What if they do it regionally and I don't get it? what do I do then?
But they wrote it for you.
Yes.
And then they kept your name. I mean, that is...
They did.
That's fantastic.
It was funny because that was Casey Nicola on the set of Smash. Were we on the same... You were always on the episode. She was out there. And we were going to craft services, and he said, we're writing the show, and we call the character Angie Schwar. They just had a chorus girl, and they just kept, he goes, we call her Angie Schwar. And they just never changed, they call it, I'm Angie Dickinson, actually, in the show, but they just never changed the first name. Yeah, we're the only ones that get it. No, none of the young people get it. But
that's right.
Yeah.
That's true.
I don't know. That was just all surreal, and I feel like now that it's over, it was like a dream, and what I said to you earlier was, you know, I just did my dream role that someone wrote for me. Like, what do I do after that?
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah.
It's tough.
It's like competing with, I mentioned on the show here that Michael Bennett knew before anybody, because he didn't have to do the show, but he knew that the show was going to, nobody could compete with that show. It's going to be very hard after the first line. We had just moved to the Schubert, right across the street.
Love that theater.
Yeah. And you know, it's true. You have to just forge ahead and create the demand in another way. But and I agree with you, Anne. It does work. It does.
Hello, ladies.
Oh, here we go.
Hi. Ooh, deliciousness.
Very nice.
Since we chopped that all up for me, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think, you know, we have a joke in our house about how for the rest of my life I'm going to be Anne Avenue Q Herat. And I'm really happy to have that as my middle name.
Yeah, certainly.
Because nobody can take it away from me.
That's right, because you originated the role, and that's what you're known for, and whatever, and that's your thing. And for the rest of your life, you're Donna, chorus line.
I know, and I didn't like it at first, but
you didn't.
I know.
Why not?
Because it's like Andrea McCardle and I work together, and she, Tomorrow is her song.
Yes.
And she got tired of singing it, and I got tired of singing, you know. And then it hit us both as we grew up a little bit, you know, that and get a little distance.
It's never changed.
No, it's
nobody. It's
Marvin
always you.
Hamlish, it's like, and it's when you've been able to be in a Broadway show, an originator role. Bon appetit, ladies.
Yes. Cheers. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Very well.
You know, I'm so grateful now. I have a whole different perspective on it with time, but also experience. And I'm very proud of the show, of course. But, you know, I admired when I was 20 years old, I did a forum with a national tour with Tisa Chang, and I would admired her then because she was so determined to bring a theater company for Asian actors to begin, mm-hmm. you know, and start something to get that ball rolling. Mm-hmm. And I admired her, and I just saw her recently. I mean, I might sneeze if I say the number.
Yeah.
But, you know, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Still going. Was that an issue, negotiating in theater?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's an issue for...
It's hard for a woman.
It's hard for a woman. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, I can't imagine what it was like for her. Do you know what I mean? Or in that generation, because it was so much worse.
Yes, but I think that's what, you know,
you know,
her.
When you think about Bjork and, you know, who's had an extraordinary career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, also kind of limited because of who she is. She's a tiny person. She, you know what I mean? She could have had other roles, but they just weren't considering her because she was Asian.
But like you said, she was very unique and very specific.
Mm-hmm. And, you know,
she wanted to... You know, very generously, but I think I admire her so much, too.
Well, I was co-president for a couple of years, a year ago, of the League of Professional Theater Women, and we honored her.
Mm-hmm.
She was honored for her work.
Right.
And, so we try to do that from time to time.
Right.
You know,
and,
every year,
I should say. To be able to give a community of the Asian community a chant, Bjork said, I want them to sing the American classic, Rodgers and Hammerstein, all these roles that they won't initially, until it breaks down a little bit, get cast in and have that experience, because we do shows and we learn from the roles that we get, and from we learn so much, you know, from the plays we do. And so I was just curious, because Tisa is still going strong, and she's done a remarkable...
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think that we all recognize, I mean, I think all... Certainly the actors of my generation, and hopefully the actors after me, recognize that, like, these people who had to blaze these trails pretty much all by themselves, not a whole lot of help or support,
right?
You know, they are the ones who really kind of opened the door.
Right.
You know. And now, you know, I meet young actors all the time who look at me like, oh, you know, I listened to you when I was growing up.
Yeah,
I know. You know, like, good for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Great. But you're like, it's like you're just part of a chain.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
But you help them find their niche.
It's like
help them find their avenue, which way to go.
If your presence, you know, if your representation inspires somebody else to do it, that's huge. You know, that is
part of why we do
amazing.
It.
That's part of why we do it.
I agree.
You know, I remember being 15 years old and standing in the wings, and this is something I want to ask each of you. If we have those, I call it in the wings, people that you watch, you learn about theater, and you get inspired by people who have paved the way.
Mm-hmm.
I would stand in the wings as a 15-year-old and watch Jeanette MacDonald, who was originally in the film. She was on the cast theater stage, and she was 60 years old at the end of her career.
Wow.
And of course, that role that she was portraying was a young girl, and, you know, ended up to be an older woman. And she still had that very light, high soprano, but it was beautiful and pure. And I remember standing there and going, I just got the concept. I'm here, and I want to do that,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we do. We keep moving, you know, and doing and sharing in different ways. So that was
your in the wings.
Wings
I don't know that yet? I do, because I had said earlier, I don't want to say it was being naive or stupid. I just found the joy where I found the joy, and that's what got me here. But I will say, I was planning a whole different life. I was working at Disney in Orlando, and I knew a million people that had moved to New York and were way more talented than me and weren't working. And so I was like, I'm working at Disney, making a great paycheck.
Is this
LA? In Orlando.
Orlando,
sorry.
Right,
Walt Disney World, sorry.
Okay. Right.
Doing every show on property. being the dance captain, running the show, doing this. They needed girls. I got girls to do this convention show. Mm-hmm. I was going to build a house. I was probably 24. I was like, this is good. I'm good. And then through working with someone at Disney, again, a relationship, my friend DJ Salisbury was a PA on the Will Rogers Follies. And he said, I think you should come up and audition for this. I had no idea what the show was. So I wasn't all in like Broadway. Like, I just didn't really know. And one of the prerequisites was being 5'8". So I had that beat because I'm almost 5'10 and 3/4". Mm-hmm. So I flew up and auditioned. I got it. I gave my notice at Disney. I pulled the down payment from the house I was going to build.
Oh, my gosh.
And I moved here. So, it's just a little different path for me.
Mm-hmm. Then the New York experience.
The New York experience. And that's saying was you kind of walking around going, oh, I'm like Rhoda or whatever it was you said, right? Mine was a little different because we did the workshop of the Will Rogers Follies at the Palace. I'm sorry, at the Nederlander on 41st Street. This was 1991. So it was a little sketchy for old Ange from Kentucky. So I would kind of walk everywhere. I was nervous to take the subway. Dana Moore, who was in the show with me, she kind of helped me with the subway a little bit. I would say my In the Wings moment probably didn't come till then because I watched Tommy Toon and Jeff Calhoun creating. Mm-hmm. Jerry Mitchell was in the chorus with me.
Yes, right.
I would watch him. I would watch Katie Huffman. And I was a swing, so that was my first job, having to learn all of those women.
And so that was the awesomeness of...
I think that would be my In the Wings moment, because I watched how everybody worked.
And you decided, this is for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know how... I didn't know the creation of it, of a book show, until probably then.
Well,
I had done some in college, but not until then. I was like, you watched it being created as it was happening.
I don't know if I had an In the Wings moment, but I just remember watching these funny women and why I wound up in comedy. And, you know, I think I saw Kay on TV, but Pat Carroll, I've also worked with her quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so just seeing the kind of work that they did and thinking, oh, that's, really loving funny people. And I don't know if I really had a moment in the wings, but I think that was just what I saw on TV and what I saw in the theater inspired me. Not particularly when I was doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
I love your story, though, of just going right into the choreographer part, and it was literally because you said yes.
Yeah, and I did,
right?
And I hadn't thought about it.
What if you were saying, you know,
and I just said, and my husband,
I don't know.
My husband was doing this at the time, and he said, you'd be great at that. And I said, okay. And then, and the director, who said, you're going to be directing really shortly. Because he said, you've got the head for it, and that's actually what happened. And I made a decision at one point I think I choreographed okay. I mean, I think it got me a lot. I've done a lot of small, quirky shows where I like it to be one idea. But I just think that I'm very glad I did it. But then I made a point that I am going to direct, and I was offered to choreograph and turn them all down. I said, I don't think, because I also, as a woman, I said, you're going to be second in command. That's just how I looked at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stuck it out, and it,
that's a good one.
Yeah, and then it got to work out that, then plays happen later.
I'm going to need all the guns I can get, right?
Yeah, because I just thought, if I do that, then it's going to be much harder to,
But what I like is that someone said, because whether it's a mentor or someone encouraging you, someone said you should direct.
I believe
that, sometimes it's just someone
giving you a little nudge.
Just a little nudge like that.
And then I think it was the next one who really, I was doing a lot of stuff, but it was Kay just said, you were really funny. And, she recommended me. I did a big production of a Forum, and I had to have permission from Larry Gelbart, and she called Larry Gelbart.
So that's amazing.
That really helped. She said she's really funny. She'll do it right. So, it's interesting how along the way, we're lucky, there's always someone to look up to, I think,
Yeah, I think so too. And to, like, Hal Prince is always, I said this before many times, but he always said, if you just need one person or one encouragement, every young person needs someone to say you can do it, or in some way say you can you can do what you love, you know, if that's the main thing. Because it's too hard, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's too hard to know. You know, like, again, you know, I was from a small place. People are from small places. I didn't have the experience of, like, I've seen every show on Broadway, and I know I'm as talented as that person.
Yeah.
No concept. Do you know what I mean? You're just in your own little space doing shows, going, like, I like this, but I don't know if I can. And for me, it was, do you remember Roger Minami?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of Liza's dancers in Liza with a Z.
He went on to do a lot of things in Atlantic City.
And directing. And he was Arthur in Arthur in the Afternoon, I think.
Right.
Okay. That's where I remember
him. That's how I know
So him. He, for some reason, was in Hawaii, and he came to see this production of Forum that I was in. You know, a community theater production, literally a terrible, terrible community theater production, like in a theater that was next to the mental institution.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking, this is not a high class place.
And but you still learn from it, right?
Of course. No, I mean, I got to play Philia. The only time that will ever happen in my career, because I was a young person. I was young. So, okay, so doing this thing for him, and he shows up, and somebody says, that's Roger Minami. I said, oh, you know, I was impressed. And he was like, you're good. You could do this. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. You know, like, you know, I had no concept of good, bad, I don't know. You know, he was so sweet to say that to me, and I sort of hung on to that.
But because, I think it means everything.
Yes, it does.
Because it's a professional, you know, again, an Asian professional who had success on Broadway. Like, literally, it's like he's done Broadway with the best that there is, you know? It's like, well, he might know.
He knows.
Maybe he knows.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's not the stupidest person ever. Because if you don't have that self-confidence, which I didn't have, or anybody to say, you should do this, because nobody in my world had ever thought of being a stage performer. Mm-hmm.
Well, how does your family, did you have support?
They were very supportive, amazingly enough.
But it wasn't their world.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
No, how could it be? We lived in Hawaii. You know?
They have theater there now.
They do, and they had theater there then.
Okay.
But it was not necessarily at a professional level. You know, we would get touring companies. I saw the tour of A Chorus Line that came through. You weren't in it. You know, and when I was a little kid, they would take me to see, you know, The Sound of Music on tour, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, you know, whatever that came through.
Yeah.
But that's still not like a world that you think you can be in. It's just so far away.
Exactly.
You know, it's just so foreign to your life. And it really wasn't until later where I was like, well, I'm on the East Coast anyway, maybe I'll move to New York. This is the kind of thinking I have.
it's cautious.
Well, I wanted to work in the theater. I knew I was going to work in the theater. I just didn't know at what.
That's so interesting.
That's interesting.
You know, because I just loved it
so much. You just want to be around
much.
It.
I did, I was like, I could take tickets. I can sew clothes. I can be a dresser. I mean, it didn't matter. I knew that I was going to work in the theater. And I just had to sort of figure out what my calling was or what I was good at.
I love that you had the list of things that you were I don't care what it is.
And I've tried most of them.
That's good.
You know, one of my part-time jobs, when I wasn't working in the producer's office, I was worked at the box office downtown and worked in, like, Vampire Lesbians of Sodom, remember? Provincetown Playhouse. I was like a box office, you know, substitute person. They would call me if they needed somebody.
And they give you free tickets if you wanted to see the
show? So I saw the show a lot. But I mean, you know, but like, just let me just go and, like, pretend like I knew what I was doing. Here's your credit card, miss. You know, I mean, like, I didn't know anything.
It's such a great education, though, about you could do anything in theater.
But I could.
So was this fun, your last experience? You were just in St. Louis?
I was doing Matilda in St. Louis, which of course was fun because it's a wonderful show.
Yeah.
And hilarious on that, you know.
At the Muni.
It's like, you have 11 days to put it up. Good luck, everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you don't know what you're doing at any point in the game. It's like by the end of the run, you're like, oh, that number was pretty good. You know, but up until then, you're like, I don't know what's happening.
There, though,
they loved it. Yeah. They loved it.
And Angie, have you played the Muni?
I did do the Muni. I did Ula in the Producers.
Ooh.
You know, they didn't make me audition, thank God, but because I had done
don't
it on Broadway.
Don't you love those jobs?
Yeah.
Yes. You don't have to. I take every offers job only. I don't have to audition.
Yeah, offers only. That's what I want to do till I retire. and then I also did Lola and Damn Yankees there at the Muni. That was many years ago. Yeah. That was
fantastic.
But yeah, I love working there. But don't you find, too, besides we were saying that you have a mentor or someone that says, you can do this. For
well,
my career, exactly, but for my career specifically, too, they for some reason I had Susan Stroman, who just honed in on me and took me under her wing, and I've done probably a total of 9 productions with her, you know, First National of, you know, the shows and the Broadway, Crazy for You, Broadway, Producers, First National of Broadway, The Merry Widow, Big Fish, out of town, Broadway.
Yes, wow.
So it's like someone hones in on you in that way, too, that wants you in the room.
Right.
So it's also...
And wants you in the room.
Yeah.
Because, yes,
and I think
I
that's the other
that.
Thing. And you probably have people that you do as a director and choreographer.
Exactly.
And that's the same thing how the Casey Nicola thing came about.
Because you make her work look great. And she's reliable for you. Yeah, no, but obviously.
But
you know? And that's what people do, I think.
Yes.
But also... I don't know if you heard this story. This is this really dates me, but Eli Wallach, I had an acting teacher that said he was also a wonderful actor, but he would get hired more than a lot of character actors because they just liked having him on the set.
Yeah.
Because he was just such a...
I think that's a huge
a pro,
part.
And he did, and he just, you know, and it makes sense because I knew him a little bit, and he was just a fine person and did his job, you know.
You show up.
Yeah. Yep. And one less thing to worry about.
Right. Yes, that's right.
Right. Is that how you feel as a director?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If you can, you know, definitely. It just makes your life easier.
And right, Pamela, most directors, I mean, they, well, my experience anyway, is like when they leave you alone, it's like I used to want notes.
Yeah.
Right. You say,
A dancer, it's a dancer in me, right? Because it's never good enough or something.
Now it's no news is good news, right?
Yeah. But as working an actor, you know, you know, usually directors, they will get on a person who they're trying to help or, you know, direct.
Yeah.
And if you're doing your work and you're fine and you're bringing in good stuff, they leave you alone. That's pretty much.
I think that happens, and that gets people confused who are really, you know, like everything is just hunky-dory and wonderful. They go, do you have anything for me? No.
Right.
You know, and then you do. You always have something.
So actors are so awful, aren't we? We're like, we kind of want you to say we're good.
Yeah, the fragile
but then,
ego, right?
Yeah.
You know, no notes?
You know, no, you're not the issue, right?
I used to drive Michael crazy in Company because... That was the big dance number that he created, you know. And I used to come, and I was so neurotic about that. I would say, no notes tonight? Can you give me notes? Because I just was, before therapy, nothing could ever be good enough. You know, I was just, you know, it was horrible.
Is that so the dancer?
So hard on myself. And finally he said, yes, I have a note. I said, oh, good, thank you. What is it? He said, you're working too hard.
That's interesting, yeah.
And I think of that sometimes because it's like that's a tendency for people who, you know, are, insecure?
Perfectionist
to leave yourself alone. You know, it takes an actor, what do they say at HB, 20 years just to be, you know, that you are enough. And you can't hear that enough from my mind, you know?
It's crazy to me that anybody like you would ever think that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm just standing here, like, just staring at her.
No, but this is why I love this conversation, you know, because it is that way. And it doesn't, and oh, believe me, I mean, I'm not that girl anymore, but there's enough of that girl in me, do you know, that you kind of, but at least now I know how to counsel myself and get that, you know, kind of objectivity that we need, you know.
And we're so...
Not to take it personally.
Right. Yeah. I think we're just so lucky to have done what we get to do for how many years on every different level that we have done. And if you would have told that little toehead girl that she was going to be sitting next to Donna McKechnie at Sardi's, I would be like, what are you talking about?
See, I don't even get what she said.
See, I know, but I do.
Donna called me to do this,
yeah,
I came up on my phone. I didn't know who it was. I was like, well, I guess I'll just answer it. I'm on vacation. Hello. Hi, Mrs. Donna McKechnie. And I literally almost had a heart attack because I just thought, like, who would have thought that at any point in my life I'd answer the phone and it would be Donna McKechnie?
We're lucky.
I know, but I'm going, I'm talking to Anne. She's been on Broadway and she was, you know.
So,
I was on
were on Broadway.
This is what we do. I got to get out more often, I guess. Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what I also, we're how's food, by the way?
Oh, it's so good.
We're just working on it here.
How many times have we been in Sardi's, one of my favorite restaurants, for all these open
I love coming here.
Just wonderful. Mm-hmm.
It just feels
the other
right.
thing I just because I don't have an immediate family, you know, and I admire women like yourself, Angie. You know, you have you married into
my second husband, yes. I raised two step teenagers from 10 to 12. They're now 23 and 25.
Mm. Wow.
And I have a little grandbaby. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done. They lost their mother, so I just took over, and I was like, I got this.
Right.
Yeah. We can do it. You know who we are. You know we're workhorses. I got this. And it was hard, and it was emotionally abusive and hard, and we just made it through, and now I'm reaping the rewards. But
yes,
it took a while.
But because that's a... And you're working as well?
I was. We moved to Chatham, New Jersey for about 6 years while they were in high school, and a little before their high school.
Those years.
Mm. And then I did a few shows. I just had to do the commute. And it was hard. Mm. I'm a city girl. I love being in the city. And then once they graduated from high school, we moved back. And they went to college, and they're doing great now.
Yeah.
But it was hard. But it also, it was my foundation of life, and this is what I have to do. And I think it enhanced what I do, and I was like, that was my sort of respite of like, oh, I can go work now.
Right.
Even though you're working at home. But I think it all...
And now I can go home.
Yeah,
right?
But I think they all sort of intertwine and made each thing better. They didn't give one iota of crap that I was playing Ula on Broadway.
I was just going to ask you.
They didn't care at all.
How did your kids...
How they met me. I was playing Ula.
So...
That's how I met them all.
So the prom is, I mean, they know you
they
now
saw,
in a
yeah.
way that.
Oh, they don't care because what I am on stage is, you know, to them I'm just naggy Angie, asking them to, you know, clean their room or do whatever. But now it's good. You know, they're older now.
Yeah.
And my stepson just moved out into his own place in Astoria, so it's good. And you know, we didn't enable them. You know, they're tough, and I think it was good. I don't know, maybe there were things I could have done differently, but it was the way it was supposed to go. And
yes, and you have a son.
I do have a son.
I saw
she raised
Elvis.
Him from a baby. Yes,
and
real.
I saw Elvis on a little interview.
Yes,
so adorable. So adorable.
Thank you.
And he loves, is he interested in?
He loves the theater. He loved the prom. I will say that. It was his favorite show of last season. we went a bunch. I took him, and then I made his grandmother take him, or he made his grandmother take him. He just loved it. And it meant a great deal to him. You know, and you know, in eighth grade, he was Max in The Sound of Music. And he was very good. He was actually very good. And somebody had taught him a comedy bit that I had never taught him, you know. And I was so excited that somebody had taught him that.
and he brought down the house.
He did. He brought down the house. Yes.
And does he want to do it?
No. No interest, I don't think. No. He told me that this year he wants to work on sound crew for the musical. And I said, that is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
You know, great. He's really interested in YouTube. I think if he had to pick a profession right now, it would be YouTuber. Okay.
Whatever that is
in your world, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I'm amazed at the actresses that raise the, from, you know, that have the baby and newborn all the way up to, You know, I got them at 10 and 12, so they were already potty trained and all that. But I'm always amazed at people that work in the business and do that. And you breastfeed and you bring your pump and you got to do this you're on your lunch break.
Yeah.
Obviously, you went to London. You brought him to London.
Yep, I sure did.
And so how was that? Like, was it
Well, it was
so
easy
hard?
Because I had a support system. You know, my parents were there. Now my father has passed. But at the time, you know, he and my mother, they called themselves the butler and the maid. And we just went around. You know, it was like I went to London. Everybody came to London. I had my entourage with me. You know,
but you just do it.
Yeah, you just do it. You know, and there are times when you make a decision and you're like, that probably wasn't the greatest decision. Like I was in 9 to 5. So the first part of that was going to L.A. And I thought, well, it'll be worth it because it'll come into Broadway. It'll be a big hit. Okay. So we're in L.A. and Elvis is maybe 3.
I was going to ask how old.
And, you know, we had only planned like one visit for my husband and him to come and visit. And they came and it was great. But it was such a long time from like the time I left home to the time they visited and then to come back. I was just like, that was just too long.
Too hard for the family.
Too hard for the family. You know, it's like your spouse does not sign up to be a single parent, you know, and then just sort of because you're working all the time at night on the weekend, that's sort of the hours you're on duty, you know.
Your
what I
spouse
mean?
Does because you work all the time.
Because you work. And that's the way it is. You know, and that's it. I mean, you know, yes, there are trade-offs, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we take turns. But before I had the baby, I was so scared about that. I said, look, every single time we need childcare, I am not going to be the default. Every single time we're going to have to negotiate. Because if I am always the default parent, I will never work again.
That's true.
You know, and I just have to.
But you figured it out.
Figure
it's
it
amazing.
Out. You know, you figure it out. Yeah. I mean, even to the point where I was like, I can't get pregnant unless I'm in a show and it's a hit so that I have something to come back to.
And see, that's that's how we have to negotiate. That's what we have to figure out. Like, it's amazing.
I was already 40 years
old.
I have to do things. I mean, I'm only one person. I don't even have a cat. Do you have a cat?
I have a cat.
Okay, good.
A bed and a chair.
Yeah, the children just didn't work out for me. I don't feel bad about it. I mean, as I said, my husband and I did, but he passed. And I just, I don't know, for me, I'm an only child. And on my mother's side of the family, I was the only child of like four couples.
Wow.
So it was, I'm not, you know, just the Hunts have a lot, but then my mother's side, there just wasn't. So it just wasn't kind of, I think it's not in everybody's makeup.
Right.
I mean, I get a lot of satisfaction in working with people and working with young people. So I feel like I get.
Your mothering goes into.
Yeah, it goes into that. Direction. And now I have an aunt who was a working woman who is turning 102.
Holy
And she's
moly.
Still at home, and I'm helping make that happen. We've gone through, it's a long, long saga.
Wow.
And she was a working woman, and it's just amazing. So that's kind of what I, you know, but it just wasn't in the cards for me. And for me personally, how my life worked out, I think if I had of, maybe, you know, I don't know, I didn't have with the other gentleman, but never met the other person I wanted to marry, I probably wouldn't be doing this. I don't think I probably would have to do something else. It's just my guess. And maybe I figured it all wrong. So I don't have any regrets about it.
No. Yeah.
You know, sometimes I feel like, oh, well, you know, it'd be nice to have, you're getting older, that person. But that's no guarantee either.
No, I was going to say, I don't.
But it is fleeting with me, the thought of, what if?
Yeah, I'm with you.
And why because my friends or my age range are grandparents and they're in the joys of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have
yeah,
a little grandbaby.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
That is going to be like so I live vicariously a little bit, but I don't really, I think you're right, Pamela.
It just wasn't,
I just don't feel. But what I do recognize is that my mothering is now, instead of the men I used to date, it's going into for the students that I may teach, you know, from time to time, and that's what I love. I love seeing young people get it or allow them to find their passion, and that really excites me. So I love to encourage that one.
And do you teach all the time? Do you do master classes?
I do
all the time.
When I do concerts, I try to. Not enough, maybe. I would like to do more. I started teaching at HB in the same studio where I studied.
All right.
Interesting.
And I did that years ago when Herbert was alive, Herbert Berghoff. And he said, "You've got to do that. You've got to teach this, you know, musical theater." And I went, "I don't know how to do it." And he goes, "Just." And he was the one who said, "Just do it. Get your students auditioned," and I got like 15 students. And he was so right. They taught me, because I don't teach. I kind of guide. I kind of like get everything from them, and I think that's thrilling. Because it's so engaging for me, and I
think about all the stories people want to grab from you.
Also, all my experience has to come to the fore, and then I have to say, "Well, if you played your intention more here, I would see more physical life." It's like it's so telling, mm-hmm. and I find it really exciting when someone can, the light bulb goes off, or they feel for the first time what it feels to sing with emotion. You know, mm-hmm. fill the lyric with emotional life, and as opposed to being dry and just.
And you
singing.
Helped that. You pulled mm-hmm. that
yeah,
out.
I mean,
of
I just it's thrilling. So I love doing that. But again, there's no playbook for what we do in our. You know, the journey is individual, mm. and it's. I love the way you can with your husbands. You know, talk about how we solve this together. And in you're single, you find, well, what, you know, where is this taking me? How can I create the demand for this kind of work? Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Did you have siblings?
Yes, I still do.
You do?
My brother and my sister.
Oh, that's
and I'm
great.
The oldest.
The oldest of three.
Yeah.
And were they, one was musical?
Nobody had children. No, that's not a coincidence, and I'm not sure why.
Okay.
But my sister and brother are really smart. They paid for their own education, PhDs. My sister's a drama therapist.
Wow.
And my brother's a scientist, and he teaches high school science to a special community of autism.
Okay.
And so they're wonderful.
And your mom and dad were not musical, or were musical?
No, nobody was.
You just came out your own.
Yeah. You know, like Southern Illinois. Right. I spent every summer there. Yeah.
I had a college friend who came home with me and said, "My God, you are Becky Thatcher."
Right.
Even though it wasn't Missouri. And I said, "Well, I guess so, kind of."
Yeah.
So as we wind up, I want to thank you for being here today.
No, thank you. This is amazing.
I just love each and every one of you. And to get to know you a little bit like this, it's wonderful for me. So thank you for coming.
We appreciate
if
it so much.
If this was champagne, I would toast it. But
can I ask one more question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I want to know.
This is Angie speaking.
Oh, this is Angie speaking.
Yes.
Sorry. Angie wants to ask one more question. Did you ever have a bad audition?
Oh,
and
my
can
God.
You tell me what that is? Because I just want to know.
I had a terrible audition, but because it was so bad,
you can't talk about.
I got the job.
Well, it's
because
so that's not
I
a bad audition.
It was for form. I'm asked to do a job where I don't have to audition, I take it. I don't even care what it is. I just hate auditions.
That's terrible.
Even though I can help people at their auditions, but. I was auditioning for A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, the national tour. Stephen Sondheim, it was the first time I sang. I didn't even know who Stephen Sondheim was. I was so nervous as Philia. And, you know, that's a very well-written, funny role.
Yeah.
And my hand was shaking. And I guess my timing was so perfect, or landed, I had no idea what it was. George Abbott literally fell off his chair laughing. So I got the job, and it took me the whole year to find those laughs. The whole year on the road.
To find what you had done in the audition?
The audition, because I was clueless. I also, Marvin Hamlisch played my audition. He was just out of Juilliard, and I was so nervous I sang at a third higher. I sang Baubles, Bangles, and Beads a third higher than he was playing it.
That's funny.
He was like up there. And he, with that left hand, he played really strongly and got me back
down.
That's great.
And that was it. And they laughed. They thought it was hilarious. And I was like quaking.
Yeah.
And I got the job, and I had no idea what to do.
Mm-hmm.
A whole year, but you know, at least I had a year.
I just never thought you would have.
That's who you are.
Yeah.
That's they're responding to
you. Well, you're vulnerable, and that's perfect.
Well, it was just, I don't know how it happened. It was just mm-hmm. because, I don't know. I couldn't see them, so I paused that extra beat you need to land the joke.
Right. Yeah.
Whatever
it's
it was.
It's all mathematical. It's all mathematics, yeah, right? Yeah. The counts. That's amazing. I just wanted to know if you ever had a bad audition.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. so sweet. So many that it's almost.
You need them, right? To go. Sometimes you go, why didn't I get that? Why can.
No, I know why I never get parts when I audition for them.
You always get them.
No,
don't
I don't.
Try it.
I know I don't. I audition a lot for things I don't get, and then after the audition, I'm like, well, of course I didn't get that. I was awful. That, you know, it's not at all what I meant to do. You know, But Seth Rudetsky, there's a whole thing that he did where I sang both parts of I Know Him So Well for an audition, because I thought that was a good idea.
How do you do that?
How do you do that?
Wasn't it good? Oh, so good. Wasn't he fun? Oh, so fun. I mean, like, it's ridiculous.
You made a choice. Did you get it?
Of course not. And rightly so.
Oh, that's hysterical. That's
like,
hysterical.
What was I thinking? Why did I think that would be a good choice? To show my many selves? I have no idea. Like, what a crazy dumb
idea. We take it. We take the no further
it's
interest.
It's hard. I mean, auditioning is hard, and I really try to be helpful. People said you're so. I'm really a good person to audition for. I just feel it's really hard. I said somebody got up, and if you're a woman, I said they cleaned up, they came down, they changed their shoes and put their audition dress on. Come on, you know. But I just think it's respectful. I mean, it's very hard. Very hard, which is another reason I'm glad I acted first before we got into this.
Right.
Makes a big difference. People, right. They don't get it.
Do people change still into their clothes?
Oh,
from
yeah,
dance
I think
clothes?
Some people still do. Or just change, you know, their, if it's a rainy day or they put their pumps, you know, whatever. But
oh, yeah,
you,
yeah.
You have to. You're coming in to present yourself.
Yeah.
But people went through a lot to get there. I just feel you know.
It's been so long since I've been to a dance call that I think the last one that I went to,
just making audition,
many years ago, I did a complete costume change into a dress and a shoe out of my dance togs.
Oh, of course.
Of course, yes, to go in and sing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because you're going to sing and you're going to look a lot different.
You really are.
Because you've just seen me clump through the dance audition at which I was very bad. But when I put my shoes on, you're going to give me that job. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's just nuts. No,
we just do it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to just ask that one last question.
Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
Good.
Oh my gosh, I remember one audition I had for Wayne Cilento.
Oh yeah.
Kind of, I guess maybe early on in his career, certainly early on in mine. I can't even remember what show it was, but I was so bad that literally all the dancers around the room were pointing and laughing at me.
No
lie.
See, now that's
nice.
Horrible.
That's
horrible.
Yeah,
insane.
I know. But it also reinforces my idea that, like, I'm not a good auditioner and I should not be auditioning.
Offers only.
Offers only.
Come on.
But you know, if I'm like, because when you're not a dancer, you know, I mean, you don't know because you don't know, but I'm not a dancer. So, for me, it's all about sequencing, and that's the hardest part.
And like repetition.
I can do the individual moves, probably, but it's like, you string them together, what order do they come in, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. And that's very hard if you're not used to it.
Luckily, you don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. You would think, but I have been to a dance call recently, and I fell down.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And
you booked it.
No, I didn't. And it was so bad that, like, everybody in the room stopped and went, like, oh, that poor old lady fell. You know what I mean? And I was like, yeah, I know. I just wanted to say, like, did I ask to do this dance call? No, you made me. So, you know.
I have a funny story. A friend of mine had a call back for Mayor Shin when Strowman did it. They were doing a replacement. And he came and he'd done the thing. He said, yes. And he said, now, do you want me to dance? And she said, no. She said, no, you don't have to. He said, you just had that look in your eye. He was very funny. Yeah, I thought it was funny. He was terrified.
So
he was
wants everybody to dance.
But he just said, you just had that look in your eye. It came out of his mouth. I thought that was hysterical.
Oh, God. What a lucky afternoon.
Thank you so much. Just take a moment. What's up next? You're doing a project, but we can't talk about it.
Well, I have had a few auditions But just things on, you know, TV, like things on tape, haven't booked any of those. And I, the only thing I ever book is offers only.
Well,
somebody offers me something.
Show.
Yeah. A reading and a workshop in the near future of some new projects.
I love that. I'm starting a reading, a new, I can't even say anything, but...
What if it was the same one we're talking about?
I don't, no, it isn't. No, it's, I know it isn't.
That would be fun.
But it's hard to get, I don't get that many, but to read a play that has actually a lead character that's over 65, you know, and really good writing. I mean, I jump on that. Anyway, so these are things, you know, so like you say, there's all something always bubbles, and my sister reminds me all the time, you know.
And you can say things.
Do workshops and readings of things that I'm not allowed to discuss.
Yeah.
Should they come to fruition.
Right. Yeah. But at least people are still thinking of us, right,
gals?
That's right.
Yeah. I love it when people say, you know, are you available for a reading? I think, yeah, I'm available.
Let me check.
There you go. Like,
and Pamela,
I was just asked to do the York is going to do these musical and Muftis things, and they're doing a Cole Porter. Three different shows, 50 Million Frenchmen. The last one is Panama Head. And I'm going to do The Decline and Fall of the Entire World as Seen Through the Eyes of Cole Porter.
Oh, great.
It's a four-person review, and Kay did it. Kay Ballard.
Yes,
that's another
yes.
reason. They said, you know what? I said, I want to do that one.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's
got great material, as some lesser-known material in it,
that's
too.
Fantastic. So.
And the longest title I've ever heard.
It is. Well, it was a Ben Bagley review. So I think it's going to be interesting because it's not been done in quite a while. So
good luck
it's
with that. I say we just
keep on going.
Keep on going, ladies. We'll just toast it.
No one's bringing us down yet.
And we're drinking water.
Yeah. Where's my booze?
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.